This is the Mumonkan Case 22, Kashapa's Flagpole. I'm reading the case from the Katu Shu, Case 144. Mahakashapa's Temple Flagpole. Ananda asked Mahakashapa, aside from passing on the brocade robe, was there any Dharma the Buddha transmitted to you? Mahakashapa called, Ananda. Yes, replied Ananda. Mahakashapa said, take down the flagpole at the temple gate. At these words, Ananda attained a great realization. Reflections. This koan also is the third case of the Dentoroko, transmission of the lamp. I have written about it in my book, Zen Light, a book of commentaries on the cases. Before turning to the koan, let me tell you something about Kashapa. Kashapa was born into a wealthy Brahmin family. By the age of 8, he had already mastered the rules of Brahminic religious practice and was actively engaged in the pursuit of the arts of music, dance, and mathematics. He grew up to be strong, wealthy, and pampered, and like Shakyamuni, became bored with his luxurious life. So he thought he would try a religious life, but his parents were opposed. Since he had reached the age of 20, they tried to get him to marry. Kashapa resisted. His parents continued to pressure him. Kashapa then came up with a great idea. He hired a sculptor to make a life-size figure of a beautiful woman, perfect in every way. He presented the sculpture to his parents and told them that if they could find someone as beautiful, he would marry her. His parents had the country searched. Eventually, they found someone who not only matched but exceeded the beauty of the sculptor. Her name was Bada Kapilani. She also was the daughter of a wealthy Brahmin family. Bada wasn't interested in getting married. She wanted to pursue the religious life as well. But she had to obey her parents and eventually was forced to marry Kashyapa. Of course, Kashyapa and Bada very soon discovered that they were one mind. So they decided to live a religious life within the confines of their marriage and agreed to a life of celibacy. By the time both sets of parents died, Kashapa and Bada inherited great wealth, property, and slaves. They were one of the wealthiest families of India. Then it happened. One day, while Kashapa was inspecting his fields, he saw a sight similar to the one Shakyamuni saw as a child. Kashapa saw his slaves plowing the fields, and the upturned earth exposed worms which were swooped up by devouring birds. Kashapa saw that life was nothing but suffering, that life was dependent upon killing, that the life of one was dependent upon the killing of another. He shared his distress with his slaves and asked them, who will bear the consequences of such evil? Their response to him was, you will. At that moment, Kashapa decided everything must go. He must rid himself of everything that can lead to the killing of others, must somehow break the cycle of death. He returned home and told Bada of his experience. He told her he wanted to renounce all of his possessions and leave them to her. Bada was amazed because she had had a similar experience. She had her slaves lay out sesame seeds to dry in the sun. Before long, insects were attracted by the seeds and crows and other birds ate the insects. And the same thoughts of death and killing came to her. She also asked her slaves about responsibility and was given the same answer, you are responsible. So she decided to give up everything. And so Bada and Kashapa shaved each other's head, donned the saffron robes of religious beggars, and left their estate. It's not clear how they disposed of their enormous property and wealth. Probably they gave it all away. But the old stories say that they freed all of their slaves and provided them with the means to live fruitful lives. Then they traveled together, like other beggars of India. It soon became evident that a man and a woman traveling together raised quite a bit of suspicion and gossip, especially since, even with a shaved head, Bada was extremely beautiful. They discussed the problem, and one day when they came to a fork in the road, they decided to part. He to take one road, she to take another. Bada eventually found a group of women who had banded together and formed a religious order among themselves. She lived in this community for several years. Eventually, Shakyamuni created an order for women. Bada heard Shakyamuni teach and immediately joined his order of bhikkhunis, or nuns. Bada quickly distinguished herself and became one of the leading nuns. Her job was to train younger nuns in the monastic discipline. Other nuns became jealous of her, first because of her great beauty, second because of her great intelligence, third because she had become a wonderful preacher of the Dharma. And so they spread nasty rumors about Bada. Bada ignored all the jealousies and nastiness about her and treated the offending nuns with detachment and compassion. She simply went about her life. After Kashyapa left Bada, he continued walking along the road. Eventually he came across a man sleeping beneath a tree. He stopped to look at him and said to himself that he had never seen such a noble person. The man exuded peace, tranquility, and compassion. Kashyapa saw that this person must be the Enlightened One, the Buddha. Indeed he was. Shakyamuni woke up and saw Kashyapa standing above him, looking deep into his eyes. They connected. Kashyapa then asked the Buddha if he could become his student. Shakyamuni rose before Kashyapa and said yes, and ordained Kashyapa on the spot with the single word, "Come," and Kashyapa followed the Buddha. Later in the day, when they stopped for a rest, Kashyapa took off his robes and laid them down for Shakyamuni to sit on. Shakyamuni commented that the robes were very fine and soft. Kashyapa looked at Shakyamuni's robes and saw that they were all torn, sewn together in small strips. And so he begged Shakyamuni to exchange robes. They did so. Kashyapa decided never again to wear fine or expensive robes, and he adopted a strict ascetic vow of poverty. Eventually, he became so poor that his robes were rags. He ate little and became very thin. Other students of the Sangha avoided him, and some shunned him because he was so shoddy, shabby, and probably stank a little. Good old Shakyamuni saw the treatment Kashyapa was receiving. So the next time he gave a Dharma talk, he asked Ananda, his attendant, to prepare his seat. He then invited Kashyapa to sit beside him during his Dharma talk. From that day, whenever Kashyapa was present, he was asked by Shakyamuni to share his seat during his Dharma talks. Kashyapa was no longer shunned by the other students of Shakyamuni. There's much more to the story of Kashyapa, and if you're interested, you can find it in a Wisdom publication entitled Great Disciples of the Buddha. As a footnote to the story, there is no record that Bada and Kashyapa ever made contact after they both joined the Sangha. But I wonder about their hearts. And so, back to the koan. This is another transmission koan like Mumankan number 6 and 23. Here's number 6. Buddha holds up a flower. The case. When the world-honored one gave a sermon at Mount Gurukuta, he held up a flower. Everyone was silent. Kashyapa smiled. The world-honored one said, I have the heart of the true Dharma, the mind of Nirvana, the form of no form, the gate of the Dharma. It does not depend on letters. It is transmitted outside all teachings. Now I give it to Mahakashyapa. And here is number 23, not thinking of good or evil. The sixth patriarch of Zen was pursued by Elder Ming all the way to a mountain ridge. When the patriarch saw Ming coming, he cast the robe and bowl of the patriarchate onto a rock and said, This robe symbolizes faith. Could it be right to fight over it? You can take it away. Ming tried to pick it up, but it was immovable as a mountain. Vacillating in fear, Ming said, I have come for the teaching, not the robe. Please instruct me. The patriarch said, not thinking good, not thinking evil, right at this very moment, what is your original face? Ming immediately attained great enlightenment. His whole body ran with sweat. In tears, he bowed his head and asked, Is there any meaning beside the esoteric intent of the esoteric words you have just spoken? The patriarch said, What I have just told you is not esoteric. If you turn your attention around to your own state, the secret is after all in you. Ming said, Though I went along with the assembly at Huangmei, in reality, I have not seen into my own state. Now that you have pointed out a way of entry, I am like a person who drinks water and knows for himself whether it is warm or cool. Now you are my teacher. The patriarch said, If you are thus, then you and I are alike students of the fifth patriarch. Keep it well on your own. It's also interesting to consider what are called the flame poems written by the ancestors at the time of transmission. Here are poems written by Shakyamuni, Mahakashyapa, and Ananda. Shakyamuni Buddha to Mahakashyapa. The original Dharma of all Dharmas is no Dharma. The Dharma of no Dharma is also a Dharma. Now when no Dharma is transmitted, how can this Dharma be the Dharma? Mahakashyapa to Ananda. O Dharma, original Dharma, in you is no Dharma or non-Dharma. How within the non-Dharma can there be a Dharma or a non-Dharma? Ananda to Shanavasa and Madhyatika. Here is the Dharma originally transmitted. When it is transmitted, it is called non-Dharma. Individually, each of us must be enlightened to it. When we are awake to the truth, even the non-Dharma does not exist. It seems clear to me, and I hope to you, that all of the koans, as well as the flame poems, irrefutably state that there is no content to transmission. And yet all of the koans begin with the wrong supposition that some things are transmitted, like brocade robes and secret teachings. And as a matter of fact, in the transmission process today, brocade robes and secret teachings are given to students by their teachers. And as to secret documents, I have binders full of such documents. They are known as kirigami. Kirigami is a Japanese word similar to the word origami, which means pieces of folded paper made into designs. Kirigami means pieces of paper on which notes are written. At the very end of the training of potential Dharma heirs, the teacher begins the process of kirigami transmission. The teacher gives one of the documents or kirigami, which was given to him by his teacher, to the student. The student makes a hand copy of the kirigami. He then returns both to the teacher and his copy to the teacher. They discussed the kirigami, or rather the data of the document. If the teacher is satisfied that the student understands what has been copied, she places a seal on the kirigami of the student. Thus, that kirigami has been transmitted. Then another kirigami is given to the student, and the process continues. The kirigami in our lineage contain teachings as well as liturgical instructions, which have been passed down teacher to student, probably for many, passed down for many generations. Probably some kirigami reach back to Dogen himself, and they are all secret. I was once at a meeting of teachers in training held at Grayson Seminary. At that meeting, I brought up the issue of the secrecy of kirigami. I questioned if that was really necessary. It reminded me of the time when the text of the Bible was to remain in the original Latin and Greek and kept away from the common people. We all know what happened. The Bible was translated into the native languages of times and ushered in the Reformation. Perhaps the open publication of kirigami could have such an effect on Zen. And so we have one koan after another, one flame poem after another, clearly teaching that there are no secrets, that nothing is transmitted, and nothing is to be transmitted. While the subject of the koan is transmission, the means or vehicle of the koan is what I have named call and response, as in case 10 of the Mumang Khan. Ching Shui, poor and alone. Ching Shui said to Kaoshan, "Master, I am poor and alone. Please help me." Kaoshan said, "Venerable Ching Shui." "Yes," Ching Shui responded. Kaoshan said, "You've had 3 cups of the best wine of Qingyuan. Why do you say you haven't wet your lips?" The same thing happens in our koan. Kashyapa ignores the question of Ananda and goes right to the heart of his heart. For Ananda clearly knows transmission is mind to mind and not document to document, not brocade robe to brocade robe. Knowing this and knowing Ananda knows this, Kashyapa brushes aside the brocade question and calls his name. Ananda understands and responds, "Yes," without thought, without interposing more questions or doubts, much in the same way a mirror reflects what is before it instantaneously. Kashyapa and Ananda are one mind. Transmission happens. Ananda asked Mahakashyapa, "Aside from passing on the brocade robe, was there any Dharma the Buddha transmitted to you?" Mahakashyapa called, "Ananda!" "Yes," replied Ananda. Mahakashyapa said, "Take down the flagpole at the temple gate." At these words, Ananda attained a great realization.